All right, welcome to another edition of Turning Red with Denny Malloy and Regina McManus.
I'm Regina McManus.
Good evening. Yeah. We have some special guests here today. This is a conservative talk format.
That's what happened last week.
Yes, that's what happened. Yeah, you know what? Yeah. That's why it makes it fun.
And after you told everyone else to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Live show.
We've got some great guests here today. We're going to talk all things conservative, all things election, things about the Mahoning Valley and why the Mahoning Valley is turning red, why the state of Ohio gets more and more red, why the United States of America gets more and more red, and with that also, what makes us red in a sense, on the other sense, what's making us mad this week. And I got some doozies for later in the show on that. After watching the Biden press conference today regarding guns, which of course is my industry, it's still stewing in my stomach right now. It hasn't come up. It hasn't gone down. It's just kind of right there, and we're going to have to figure out how we're going to deal with this in the future. But anyway, we've got some great guests today from H&F
Strategies.
You guys are a marketing, political consulting company, a little of this, that. Why don't we go around here and introduce yourselves? And first of all, what is H&F Strategies? And then a little bio on yourselves, guys.
Sure. Thomas?
Absolutely, yes. So H&F Strategies, we are a digital consulting firm based out of Sugar Land Falls and Mahoning County as well. And we do digital media and websites and data and all sorts of other direct mail stuff for political candidates, nonprofits, PACs, a little bit of private sector stuff here and there as well. So we're excited to be here and talk about the 2022 election and what's going on in Ohio and across the country.
Thomas, you've worked on other campaigns before in the past, not just in Ohio. You've been around the globe.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from, born and raised in Florida. All my parents are from up here in Ohio. And so I worked on Governor Scott's 2014 election. I did the Jacksonville mayor's race, state senate candidate. Worked for Turning Point USA with Charlie Kirk over starting that organization and getting it going as their national field director. Then I was the national field director at Act for America, another political conservative organization, before starting the company that we work for today, H&F Strategies, with my partner, Tex Fisher. So.
Yeah, I've known Thomas for a long time. We actually met way at the beginning of Turning Point USA. I'm back when it was a very small organization and worked there together for a couple of years. After that had wrapped up, we co-founded H&F Strategies. Really wanted to pursue this as our dream to provide good digital marketing and strategy services to candidates all across the country with a little bit of an emphasis here at home in Northeast Ohio, which is what matters the most to me. But it's been a great time. We've been able to meet a lot of great people and help a lot of great people get elected as well.
Yeah, I got my start on the ground working for President Trump in Luzerne County, Northeast Pennsylvania, similar county to Mahoning County. Met Tex and Thomas at Turning Point USA, worked with Thomas a little longer over at Act for America, and here we are in Ohio now looking to keep it red and keep the movement stronger.
No, I got to know you guys, of course, through Regina, who's my campaign manager during my run last year. How did you guys get together with Regina?
I've known Regina for, I don't actually know when we met. It's been a very long
child.
Time. That too, yeah. I've known you for, feels like forever.
Yeah, it's been a long time, yeah.
Yeah.
At least eight years.
Yeah,
that's so about Mahoning that. County?
Yeah, he was, you were.
Yeah, I started the Young Republicans Club
a
long time ago, did that for a couple of years, stayed involved, did a little bit less with the YRs and more
focused
on. You
worked for the state party, right?
Yeah, I worked for the state Republican Party in 2018. And we worked very closely together on
if I remember correctly,
and haven't looked back since then.
That's right. Yeah.
Probably a lot of campaign experience here and then a lot of PAC experience and conservative nonprofit, too. So
That's why I was so excited about today's show when I heard you guys were going to come in, because we all watch on TV. You see the guys, the analysts on Fox News or CNN or whatever news network you do, and they talk about the points and they talk about the polls and they talk about where you need to gain ground. And that's kind of what you guys do, is you kind of look at that background data, you kind of strategize, you're weak here, you're strong here, you do this, don't do that. I mean, it isn't the candidate making these decisions, and I learned that through just a county commissioner's race. It was her telling me what decisions were being made based on experience and based on things behind the scenes type of stuff. My job was easy, to go out, look somewhat presentable, shake some hands, and smile to people, but getting to be in the right place at the right time, the right people to get your message out is is the work of people like you, all four of you.
Yeah, they worked on your campaign as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Now, one thing jumped out at me a little bit hearing you guys talk. Right, you were working in Chicago for a little while, right?
I did, yeah.
You were a Republican in Chicago.
Yeah, not just Chicago, Evanston, Illinois is where I lived. And that's Northwestern. That's where Northwestern is based, for those who don't know. And they actually recently just started doing reparations in Evanston with residents there. So it's publicly funded, so it's not government funded yet. People in Evanston, all the crazies there, they make all these donations and then they distribute it out to their minority population in form of reparations. So.
But I would imagine the Republican Party isn't.
No,
I mean we've had Republican governors and everything, of course, in Illinois.
Yeah, Rauner was there.
Technically,
I mean,
and Jonathan, same with you. You're in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
Right next door to Scranton. Sold stomping grounds of Sleepy Joe.
Exactly. Yeah. And Hillary. And unfortunately.
Yeah. So how was that? How was that being a Republican there? I know different parts of the state are different, Pennsylvania, and they went one way in 16, another way in 20. But you, in your experience, I guess let's start out, how did you see the change in Pennsylvania?
I think it came down to Trump. I mean, I think it was just someone to ignite the party, ignite the base, bring out first-time voters in record numbers. And I think Pennsylvania was always defined by Pittsburgh and Philly and the turnouts there. And I think Trump was able to speak to people in those areas, Luzerne and Lackawanna County, and kind of offset that vote in those bigger cities and eventually take the state.
Mm-hmm. Regina, it's the thing that you and I talked about many times before. Politics is kind of like a marathon. It's not a race. It's not a sprint. So it changes every 4 years. Every 4 years, you get new political families. You get new candidates that you advise. It's cyclic. So weathering the storm, right? We get a president. It's not like the end of the world. We weren't like the people you saw when Hillary lost, laying on the floor crying, throwing temper tantrums, things like that. We know in 4 years, it comes around again. In 2 years, you got the midterms. You got Senate seats. You got congressional seats. So in your strategies of what you guys all do for a living, how does that affect, I guess, the mindset when you're the ones that have to stay calm and cool when the public might be thinking, oh, it's the end of the world. He's taking our guns. We're stuck with Biden. We're stuck with whoever. How do you keep your cool with that and plan for the future?
That's a challenge because, we care just as much as people outside of the field do. We care about those issues. We care about the gun executive orders we saw announced today, those things get us heated too. It's just important that we maintain that sense of urgency and can communicate that other places to the people that we're, trying to reach with whatever our message is and whoever that client specifically is. But it's definitely a challenge. And I think anybody who would tell you that they're able to stay completely calm during these things would be lying to you.
Yeah, it's important to recognize that politics is cyclical. So every time a president gets elected, it's pretty standard for them then to lose their House of Representatives in the next midterm elections or to lose several seats that way. So that's, it's what we're expecting in 2022, and I think that's what everyone's been predicting, is to see a nice red wave coming in Congress. Senate might be a different story. It's going to be a lot tougher, but so it's recognizing that, and then it's also recognizing you can attack things that are happening federally on the state level. Because we do have states' rights in this country. The founders were smart in that regard. So we have that ability to combat a lot of the things that Biden's doing, like making Ohio a, gun sanctuary state, things like that on the Ohio House level, and, pressuring Governor DeWine to possibly do something, which is, we all know, a very tall order in this state, unfortunately. But it's understand that there are ways to combat things on the state level, too.
As far as state politics go, let's start out with state stuff, I guess. That's probably, we have state representatives, we have state senators. Mm-hmm. State representatives, what are their terms, Regina? How long is state rep?
State rep is 2 year.
And the state senate?
Four.
It's four. So they can only do?
They're term limited
eight years.
Yeah. You can only do 8 continuous years. So you could do 8 years in the House, go to 8 years in the Senate, or just do 8 years in the House, take 2 years off, and do another 8 years. There's kind of soft term limits. You're not allowed to serve more than 8
consecutive
years.
So you got to have a break in the middle.
Got to have a break, yep.
And that is something that a lot of people are debating is great, because then you don't have career politicians. You have new blood come in. Mm-hmm. You can't have somebody that just owns the vote, bulldoze over another society of people, another group of people, because they know eventually their time's going to be up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I think term limits have been really, really helpful for maintaining fresh perspectives in the state house. It also creates a lot of opportunities. It's it's not quite the same when you have an open congressional seat. That's really a once-in-a-generation thing in a lot of places, a lot of parts of the state, and a lot of parts of the country.
Yeah, because Tim Ryan, what is it, 18 years?
I believe this is his 10th term. He'll be hitting 20 years soon.
And before that, Traffigan had 17 years before that. So we're looking at, you know, 35 years or so since we had someone else. And that, you know, Lyle Williams before that, of course. But that's that's a long time. That's a generation. And that's good. That could be a generation of success or it could be a generation of nothing but failure. And it depends on the perspective of what you do and where you are. But that it is something that's definitely key. Without term limits, you know, you're kind of stuck with it. You know, it's like having a dog. You know, you only own so many dogs in your life because they live, you know, 13, 14, 15 years. With you only have so many congressmen, too, unfortunately.
Or fortunately, depending on your perspective.
I love my dog. Wait, I wish I had 30 years with him.
You would. Yeah. You'd love that. Yeah. And they might give you that. And your dogs can run and win, too. All right, so state rep, state senate. Ohio is a red state when it comes to that. You know, we own every state, from the governor, secretary of state, attorney general, treasurer, state auditor. We own more senators and more state reps than Democrats do. So we are pretty solid, red as this couch in Columbus. Yeah. But those change again. We had Strickland, who got in there as a Democrat, and things shift. And a lot of it depends, too, on the federal races, who the president is, and how the people retaliate. COVID and everything, this is so different. So with the state, we got a state race coming up. I would presume we haven't heard very many challengers on the other state races, but when it comes to governor, let's talk about governor first for a little bit. Because that's the thing where everybody's seeing now. The governor isn't very popular right now.
No,
even with his own party.
Especially with his own party.
Yeah. He may be more popular with the Democrats. You know, we've had mask mandates. We've had people's weddings have been canceled, gatherings. Bars, restaurants, curfews. You know, there's been many things the way he's handled COVID. And then we had a state health director who was a Democrat, and he kind of let her take control and write the policies. And it was all fun and games until we realized, wait a minute, this has gone a little bit too far. You know, that's going to affect him. That's going to affect him. What do you guys think? Do you think he's a solid lock?
I think with Governor DeWine, kind of what we've seen out of him over his term so far, it's been kind of his weak and feckless leadership. Essentially, every time he's, you know, been faced with a major issue, and he wasn't faced with the, you know, idea of the state house overriding him in a veto, he has caved. You know, whether it's, you know, his support for Biden very early on, whether it was his support for Amy Acton all throughout the COVID era, you know, he's been a really weak leader, I feel like, for the Republican Party. Especially in the era of Trump, when we're used to having leaders who stand up and fight for what we believe in and fight for truth, we seem to have a governor currently in office who's very weak. So I mean, if there was a good candidate that could give him a good race, I think it could be something. But right now, as we see it, he's definitely the front runner for sure.
Well, let's talk about that. Who are the names, Regina? You've been following this closely. Who could potentially go against the governor?
Like to see Renacci go against the governor.
Former congressman. Business owner.
Yes.
Yeah, ran statewide in 2018, so he's got some name ID.
Yeah.
A lot of positives there, and he's a strong conservative, came up during the Tea Party movement.
Yeah.
So a lot of good things to say about Congressman Renacci.
How's the polling look on that with you guys, with your HF strategies? Have you looked into that race very much as far as what you would do if you were a bug in his ear or you were running the ship? How would you beat our governor?
Oh, we definitely have thought about it. There's no polling for that race that I've been able to see yet. Polling this early on is also kind of a crapshoot with how unreliable the entire polling industry has become. But I think Governor DeWine's only vulnerability is in a primary. I think he can expect a relatively comfortable general election should he survive a primary.
Because Democrats like him.
Because right, and the Democratic infrastructure in the state is virtually non-existent. They don't have enough quality candidates to even field a full statewide slate. If Tim Ryan running for Senate, maybe Nan Whaley or the mayor of Cincinnati running for governor, and then outside of that, I don't know who they have. Danny O'Connor is a multiple-time congressional loser who's planning on running and losing for Congress again. He likes to float himself to run statewide, and he decided not to. So I'm not sure who the Democrats could put up, but I think the way to the way to beat the governor in a primary would be just to highlight his weak leadership and his personality being just such a radical departure from what the party is looking for now. I think Republicans are not looking for somebody to go out and do press conferences and be polite and play nice with the media who's not, you know, who's not their friend. And the governor does tend to cooperate with the media more so than some other governors do, like Governor DeSantis. I think he kind of strikes the right balance between being adversarial and, you know, pushing back and encountering media narratives without necessarily going a little bit too far, and he's able to stay disciplined. Whereas Governor DeWine typically, you know, we don't see those types of interactions with Governor DeWine. Personality-wise, he's just much more laid back, very old school, very establishment. And I think there's definitely a disconnect between his style of governance and just his personality from what the party's looking for now. And I think if Jim Renacci wants to beat him, he needs to tie him to, you know, the lack of pushback to a lot of the Biden agenda. I think we saw a few weeks ago where the day before Joe Biden came to Ohio to meet with the governor, he announced he, you know, was supporting a really aggressive gun control package in the House and Senate. And there was no, you know, there was no condemnation. There was no pushback from Governor DeWine. He came here, he played nice, shook hands, took pictures, was very complimentary of Joe Biden. And I think, you know, that's an opportunity for Jim Renacci or anybody who's challenging the governor to seize on and say, this is, you know, this is a weak leader who's not standing up for us. He's not standing up for our interests and is just more than willing to go about with business as usual and just kind of not rock the boat and keep everybody happy. And that's not what we're looking for.
All right. Now, how about let's just key in just on the Republican Party, you know, just on the conservative viewpoint of this stuff. Republicans aren't real happy with the governor. Mm-hmm. He is a Republican. There is a state party. There is a state GOP. They've got new leadership. Their leader left. She's running for Senate. Mm-hmm. Where does that all fit in? Because you got to look at this. You know, Trump kind of took over Ohio. There, the Trump vote is what makes Ohio red. Mm-hmm. And when you have the governor is not friendly with Trump, hasn't had real good comments about Trump, didn't come to Trump's defense through the impeachment stuff, and the president, former president, 45, doesn't have very much good to say about DeWine. In fact,
right.
You know, he would love to see somebody challenge him,
mm-hmm.
yeah. like a Jim Renacci. Mm-hmm. And go head to head with them. What do you do if you're an active Republican? You're carrying the flag. You're Regina's friends, the ones that go to all the Republican events. How torn are you with this when the leader of your party, in a sense, isn't in step with the former leader of our country, mm-hmm. who really brought everybody to the dance? You know, mm-hmm. Trump drove us all there, and then he's not there right now. And are we just supposed to follow? Yeah, Wine's leadership. Where? How do we fit in with this? What is a Republican supposed to do if they're caught in the middle of this? Do I stick with my governor, or do I take a chance and go for somebody new and still?
Well, that's why primaries get ugly. I mean, we know that.
Yeah,
we've been on opposite ends, you know. But then we all come together in the general and we support whoever wins the primary.
I think it's looking, you know, at how have you done this past year in Ohio under Mike DeWine's leadership. And then you look over at other states like Texas and Florida, and, you know, they have strong governors who haven't been caving to all the COVID mask mandates and caving to all the shutdowns and all of the pressure from the woke left. You know, DeSantis and Abbott have been standing up against that, and their states have been faring quite well. People are moving there in mass. They, mm-hmm. you know, there's been months throughout COVID where they've increased jobs, where in Ohio it's you know, struggling the other way around. And we're not leading right now on this issue, which, you know, I think Ohio would like to see their governor out there mm-hmm. taking the lead on this type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like DeWine has worked more on the edge of where Andrew Cuomo is up in New York rather than where Ron DeSantis is down in Florida. And I think that's a problem. So, you know, I think for conservatives in the state, they should really, you know, address how they've done throughout this last year and then look at, you know, which leader they think could lead their state moving forward, whether that be a Congressman Renacci if he decides to run, or Governor DeWine moving forward if you think that he's, you know, the answer. But
I think it's safe to say among conservatives, Ron DeSantis is definitely the gold standard among Republican governors in the country right now. And the biggest
Regina made this for there. She's got a favorite thing in Texas.
I do.
Okay.
The biggest issue on everyone's minds right now is COVID, and you know, COVID is probably the reason we don't have 4 more years of President Trump right now. And when it comes to lockdowns and mandates, I think DeWine has been on the opposite ends as Ron DeSantis in Florida. Right now, Florida's open, Florida's thriving. Ron DeSantis is suing the Biden administration for restrictions on cruise lines right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas, again, Mike DeWine has been seen coddling Joe Biden and applauding Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I think Ohio wants something different.
I think if you asked a vast majority of active conservatives in Ohio who they view the leader of the Republican Party in Ohio as, they would still say President Trump. They wouldn't say Mike DeWine. So I think that's the biggest challenge that the governor is going to face in his reelection, is to establish himself as a credible conservative leader of the party in Ohio, because I think right now there's a big disconnect from him and just reality with the activists and the primary voters.
If President Trump were to get involved, it would be a whole new race.
Yeah. It was one of the last tweets he put out before he was suspended was alluding to getting involved in the Ohio governor's race. So I would definitely expect to see him involved in some capacity. Probably a little bit closer near the finish line of the primary, but I think he'll get involved.
All right, so how does the Republican Party, we know DeWine can be beat. Mm-hmm. We know that there's fractures. And it makes sense that if it's one-on-one, versus a challenger comes up that's credible, that's pro-Trump, that's got the conservative values, that's got ethics in class and distinguished career, somebody that people say, hey, we like this guy, this is a guy we can follow, DeWine can be beat. But if you have three or four different people in different parts of the state, and they all suck the anti-DeWine vote and split it amongst themselves, basically, aren't we just opening the door for DeWine to walk right in there for four more years?
Yeah, I think if there's a crowded primary, it's absolutely plays into the governor's
favor. That's the benefit of having the Senate seat open, too, because you're seeing that as kind of the seat where all the hotshot Republicans are, you know, the top Republicans statewide. Candidates, they're going for the Senate seat that's open right now, with Portman jumping out. So I think that's, you know, a real positive with that, because it does leave the potential for a good one-on-one race with, you know, a guy like someone like Renacci, who has the statewide recognition, who's already run statewide, who has a good track record in Congress. So hopefully, you know, with a very crowded primary field in the Senate, that could be a really nice thing.
It sounds to me like a lot of people are bringing up that Renacci name. So, yeah, he hasn't announced that he's going to run.
He has not.
He does have a foundation still going. You're familiar with that somewhat. Doesn't he have a foundation? He's traveling across states still doing meetings and town halls?
Yeah, they have a future foundation. And he started that after the Senate race. And now he's been all over the state of Ohio, so he even gained more name recognition.
And he wanted to be governor before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then something changed, and
that's when Josh Mandel dropped out of the Senate last 2018.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 2017.
So Jim kind of took the call to run for Senate at that time, kind of replace him, and that was more of a people pushing him in that direction.
Yeah, and that was three people in that race. It was Melissa Ackerson, Mike Gibbons, and Renacci. And Renacci won the primary.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, lost to Sherrod Brown. But,
yeah.
You know, it's a tough race.
It's been here for a while. Yeah, exactly.
2018 was a very difficult cycle,
tough year, exactly.
Even in Ohio, you know, to a much lesser extent than some other states that had a blue wave. It was still a tough election year, particularly running for any type of federal office with the first midterm of any president is, you know, you typically expect to lose seats in Congress. Yeah. And we saw that pretty heavily in the House. We didn't lose any House seats in Ohio, but we weren't able to take back that Senate seat like we were hoping to.
All right, let's talk about that Senate seat a little bit. The Senate seat, Rob Portman decides he's going to step down. Mm-hmm. He's going to retire for whatever reasons. I don't know the behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, you hear rumors, things like that. Portman was a pro-gun guy. He was a popular senator. Mm-hmm. Probably would have been able to retain that seat. Had he stayed there, I'm sure he would have still got challengers, but probably would have retained it. Well, he decides, throw it out there, one of you guys take it, and hopefully it won't be the Democrats, which we all know how crucially important the Senate is right now. Mm-hmm. And we cannot lose a Senate seat.
It's not a seat we want to take any risks with.
Not at all.
At a 50-50 tie right now in the House, where, you know, Vice President Harris seems to just, you know, break every tiebreaker, and, you know, it's definitely not a seat we want to play games with. So whichever candidate, you know, and there's a lot running, whichever one gets it, we definitely want them to be a strong conservative. So
as of right now, we have Josh Mandel as a declared candidate, our former state treasurer. We have Jane Timken, former party chairwoman of the Republican Party. We have Mike Gibbons. Out of Cleveland.
Bernie Moreno.
Bernie Moreno, former car dealership owner. other business.
We have J.D. Vance. Did he announce it yet?
J.D. Vance. Well, no. Peter Thiel started a PAC for him and put $10 million into the PAC. Yeah.
Peter Thiel was the
founder of PayPal. Yeah.
Like $10 million, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he put $10 million into a PAC for J.D. Vance to run for Senate. And, you know, of course, J.D. Vance has very good name ID across the state. He's, you know, very smart, very intelligent man, so.
Harvard grad.
Harvard grad, exactly. You know, Hillbilly Elegy, you know, movie and book, so. You know, a lot to like there and a lot of money back behind him, you know, with Peter Thiel and all of that. And then, yeah, you've got Josh Mandel, who's backed by Club for Growth, and he already had a lot of money in his coffers from the 2018 race.
Yeah, so he had $4 million, plus he's known, he was a state senator. Mm-hmm.
And he just raised 1.4 in his first quarter, $1.4 million.
First to endorse Trump in the state.
Young, yeah. Aggressive, kind of. Kind of like you guys
treasurer.
A little bit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
doesn't Josh look his age.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, he aggressively wants it. He's coming out. He's coming out with the fighting words, and we could talk about it because it's public. You know, we saw it on Politico. But Trump said, "Okay, this Senate's important," and he called all of the guys and said, "Hey, you think you're gonna run for Senate? I want you at Mar-a-Lago." So they all went down there, and they have this backdoor meeting where they come down to be a guest for a fundraiser, actually for Max Miller, who's running against Anthony Gonzalez, and brings him in the back room, and he's like, "Okay, let's talk." And he's got Jane Timken.
It was a food fight. Food fight.
And he's got Gibbons, and he's got Josh Mandel. Yeah. And was Bernie there?
Yeah, Bernie was the fourth. Yeah.
He's got Bernie. He doesn't have J.D. Vance, but he's basically like they said on Politico, it was like a apprentice show where Trump was sitting behind the table, and they're all sitting there looking at him like they're in school, like they're ready to get disciplined, and he's pretty much picking on each one of them as he goes down the line, telling them what their issues are, what their problems are, right down the line, like he did with the apprentice. Who's going to emerge as a leader? Who's going to emerge as the guy that people are going to follow?
Exactly.
He basically paid apprentice with them. And then he sent them on their way, and then all of them probably were sweating it out when they were there. And he hasn't endorsed any of them yet, but he may or he may not. What do you think, Virginia? You think he's going to endorse somebody early or late or not?
I don't know. I don't think he's going to endorse early. He probably will late, like last minute when he sees, you know, who's the front runner, who are the people gravitating to. He might endorse then. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he'll definitely get involved. I think it'll be closer to the end because we know that President Trump doesn't like to pick losers, so he might want to wait and see how things play out.
Yeah.
Reassess at some point in the spring of next year. You know, our primary might be pushed back because of the delay in redistricting. We're typically expecting to have a May primary, but because of the census data being delayed, we might not be able to vote until June of next year. So there's a long time, a really long time, and a lot can happen, but I definitely expect he'll get involved for one of the I think the top two contenders that we're seeing right now, I think, are the most likely to win his endorsement when it's all said and done.
You know, the funny thing is is Josh was definitely the first state office holder to announce. Of course, Jim Renacci announced first. Out of all the office holders, Jim Renacci was with them from the beginning, but that's a separate race.
Mm-hmm.
But Josh came out as an office holder, state treasurer, and supported Trump.
Right.
But Gibbons gave him a bunch of money.
Yep.
He did.
Yeah. You know, raised $10 million, whatever it was, total or whatever, and raised a whole bunch of money for him. And then Jane Timken says, "Well, I'm the party leader, you know, and I supported you, and the party supported you."
Yeah.
Although the top state official, Mike DeWine, didn't, and my boy Anthony Gonzalez didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't support them as much anymore because I support you more. Mm-hmm. So she's in the mix with it. And then Bernie, I don't know what he said.
His daughter actually worked for Trump. So that was his angle, apparently, in the meeting. Was
so it was kind of like when one guy says, "Oh, I know so-and-so."
Exactly.
And someone's like, "Well, I know him better."
Exactly.
And then someone else says, "No, I know him better. Well, I slept with him." Oh, yeah, well, he's my cousin. You know,
great to be a fly on the wall in that room.
That meeting would have been great. That would have been like the Apprentice season finale. That would have been the Dennis Rodman episode of The Apprentice.
I've always wanted Trump to pull out like this own political apprentice show and just start bringing in all the states people and televising
what
it.
What better year to do it than 2022?
Exactly.
What are they going to do, tell them no?
Let the people decide. The people would watch.
Yeah, let the people decide. Vote in the end. You go to election day, and that's how you'll tell your vote. But let's let them do all their campaigning on The Apprentice every Wednesday night.
I would love that.
Season finale, awesome. He makes an endorsement, comes to Columbus, puts on a big rally.
Yeah.
That'll be the season finale.
Yep, and we have it voting night live from the boardroom, voting night. And they'll announce who won the primary. You know, he'll fire the other ones and announce who the winner is. People would love that. The Trump people would love that.
I'd watch it.
I'd
absolutely
watch it. I think the ratings would be great.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about redistricting.
Yeah.
That is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked earlier about Tim Ryan. We talked about the district. We were the 17th, and then we're the 13th. Redistricting is they do a census every 10 years. They scramble the numbers up and say, okay, now this many people live here in this district. Now in this district, this many. And the goal of the districts is you get districts based on your population. So you get a place like American Samoa has one district or whatever it is. And then you have North Dakota might have a couple. When Texas has a bajillion and Florida has a bajillion, kind of like with the elector, you know, delegates. Ohio, we've got at least 16 districts because we're in the 16th. And I know it's higher than that. But they said, okay, we don't have enough people. We lost people or people moved around to different areas. So we got to redistrict. We had to redraw the lines to keep it fair for the people in that area so they all have equal representation from a congressman in the U.S. House. So they're looking at it, and we're kind of surrounded. Regina was giving me a rundown on this. The 13th district is an island, right?
Yeah.
As far as a Democratic island.
Yeah. Well, we actually, Tim Ryan, we're surrounded by a Republican congressman. Mm-hmm. We're the only Democrat. How do you think it's going to...
Well, that's tough to project. I think we're almost for certain going to lose a seat, drop from 16 House seats to 15. Places like Montana are going from one at-large district to their population's grown so much they're now going to have two districts, most likely. Mm-hmm. With the census data being delayed, we're probably not going to know for a few more months, or at least until
September.
So there are a number of things that could happen. For a couple of years, people kind of speculated that the 13th district would just go away, kind of have the northern half absorbed by Dave Joyce's district and the southern half absorbed by Bill Johnson's district.
I think that's where I'm going to end up, in Dave Joyce's district.
Yeah, like it would basically be Mahoning south would be Congressman Johnson, and then Trumbull and north would be Congressman Joyce. But there's also
If they eliminate it.
There's also been a push. I think it was either Bruce Olden or Sam Cavelli was on the news a month or two ago, advocating for a district that kind of resembles the old 17th district or the old Jim Trafficant district, where it's a Mahoning Valley kind of in its entirety centric congressional district that would have Trumbull, Mahoning, Columbiana, maybe Portage or parts of Stark.
Get rid of all that county and everything.
Yeah, I think it's very unlikely that we'll end up having, like, our congressional district, the Mahoning Valley, will intersect with Akron or Summit County at all. With the reforms they put in place, you can't split counties as kind of as easily as you used to. There's a cap on the number of counties you can split more than twice. I think it's 10. I could be wrong there, but I think they're gonna try and just keep the bigger metropolitan areas kind of independent of themselves and not connect Youngstown and Akron necessarily, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Nobody in Youngstown goes to Akron and shops. People in Akron don't use our restaurants here. They're different. They're not the Mahoning Valley. Mahoning Valley is special. We're our own breed of people, kind of like you guys, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, where you worked up there. They got their own identity. They are their own people. Definitely. And you probably have the same thing in Florida. I would remember the Panhandle Floridians are different than the Gulf Coast Floridians.
South Beach, exactly, totally different.
And here, we're Mahoning Valley, and we're proud of that. We understand it, we know it, and that's why we were so threatened when Christina Hagen ran, although she won Trumbull County. She won the county Tim Ryan lives in.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of people that still resented. They voted for her, like, half-heartedly because they didn't want the Democrat, but they half-heartedly threw her a vote, even though they said, not really one of us. She doesn't know a Mooney Ursuline football game and what that's all about. She doesn't know the Mount Carmel Festival and Niles and the cheese puffs. She doesn't know the history that our valley has and the places that make us
Tim
special.
Ryan, though.
It's something that was my case even there. We discussed that. Tim Ryan at least is a valley guy.
Yeah.
He's somebody that can relate, that he knows. Now, he may be out of touch with the Democratic national policies and with the direction he's gone that way, but he's still a valley guy. He still grew up seeing the same sights and smells and tastes that we did, that grew up here in the Mahoning Valley. He understands it a little bit that way. So I think you got to pass on a lot of people, and especially in Youngstown, that's why he's still there. But with this new redistricting, theoretically, his district could be gone. Mm-hmm. He could be out of a job. They could redistrict you right out of a job, or make him be the Christina Hagen exactly. that's got to run outside of his district. And then that could never happen. He'd have to eat all his words of her running in his district mm-hmm. if he's going to run in someone else's district. He couldn't do that. So he's contemplating the Senate run, of course. But that, we don't even know when that's going to happen. They say September, October. They got to agree on it between the Democrats and the Republicans, or they don't agree.
Yeah.
It's not a 10-year district. It's something less. It's a really crazy formula to do that.
Yeah, it's we only get the census data in September. It's going to take, I would imagine, a month or two at the bare minimum to actually do the work of drawing the lines. We have a redistricting commission in Ohio now. You know, it consists of leadership from the House and Senate. A lot of the statewide elected office holders sit on that commission, and it's their responsibility to kind of work together to drop those maps to pass through the legislature. And it does require some Democratic support. So it's not the same situation as it was 10 years ago, where it's just kind of a free for all, and whoever's in charge can draw the map however they see fit, which is what happened 10 years ago, and which is the map that we see today is the result of that. Things have changed a lot since then. I don't think there's any way to add the necessary population to Tim Ryan's district as it stands now and have it be anything more blue than a true flip or to a true like toss up purple district, especially with the, you know, the county splitting regulations that they put in place with the redistricting reform. I don't think there's any way they draw a district built around the current 13th congressional district, which is favorable for someone like Tim Ryan.
All right, say Tim Ryan runs for Senate. What Republicans do we have in the Mahoning Valley to help turn that congressional seat red?
Probably, I would imagine most of them would all be interested, just kind of how we saw with the Senate race. When that opened up, everybody's decided to float their name and everyone's interested. You know, we have Senator Rooley. We have Christina Hagen might want to take another crack at it. It's very possible she was a strong candidate. She performed well. Again, she's not really a Valley person. I think that did cause her some issues, and she wasn't able to connect with people in a lot of the ways that you need to in the Mahoning Valley to win. I think, you know, she did perform relatively well in the Mahoning Valley despite being an outsider. But those votes from Akron, yeah, she won in Trumbull.
Tim Ryan's, yeah, county.
She ran behind the president overall, I believe, by 3 or 4 percentage points. In the Mahoning Valley, it might have been a little bit higher than that. Mm-hmm. But overall, you know, she ran a good race. She raised a lot of money. So it was definitely impressive. But I would imagine most Republicans with a pulse that are holding elected office or in a position of influence will be interested in that seat should it come open.
On the Democratic side, we could start at A and literally end at Z.
Yeah.
As far as who would potentially run for congressman or congresswoman on the Democratic side. They've been waiting, and it would just be a bloodbath. It would be unbelievable how they would... That Democratic Party would eat itself up with pitting friend against friend against friend on their side. We'd see some made for TV or I should say made for cable TV action going on there. But in the Republican side, we are turning red. We got some people up and coming. We've got Mike Loycheck took over the seat that was a Democratic held seat that Gil Blair had, and before him was Glenn Holmes, which they consider a Democratic district in Trumbull County.
Yeah.
We've got Mike O'Brien's termed out, so we've got a race coming up in Trumbull County that Martha Yoder, with very little to no help from the Republican Party statewide.
Almost won last time.
Almost won. Yeah. She came with 300 votes of beating Mike O'Brien. That just shows how bad people can't stand Mike O'Brien.
If the RP would have stepped in and helped her a little bit, she would have won that race, I feel.
Yeah, if your margin's that close, it's the difference between what happened in her race and what happened in Don Manning's race is... Don got support from outside at the end because people saw an opportunity, and I don't think people saw the same opportunity with Martha until it was too late.
Yeah.
It did shock everybody, but that just shows people were tired of the same old family names. They're tired of the same old career politicians jumping ship. You know, in Mike O'Brien's case, he went from commissioner, mayor, state rep, just a circle. It's like,
it's
been an elected official in Trumbull County longer than I've been alive. and it's just pretty much every time he gets termed out or there's another opportunity, he just bounces and bounces and accomplishes absolutely nothing.
Seems like we say that about a lot of politicians in the Mahoning Valley.
Yeah.
Never had a real job.
It's been our claim to fame. Yeah. With like someone like Tim Ryan, he ran for state Senate basically from law school, served a short stint in the Senate, ran in a crowded Democratic primary for Congress. And
ran as Jim Traficant's protege who worked for Traficant.
Right.
until he got elected. Yeah. That's one disagreement I had with Tim before. His roots. He grew up in the trafficking tree, kind of like the Bill Belichick coaching tree.
Yeah.
And all the other coaches that follow that tree still pay homage to Bill Belichick. They wouldn't be where they were if it wasn't for him. People that follow the trafficking tree, you know, there's some of them that forget where they bloomed. Mm-hmm.
If you look at Tim Ryan's platform in 2002 when he was first getting elected, it would sound like a Republican platform today. Yep. And obviously the things he says and does now are not even remotely similar to that. He's totally abandoned those values, and the kind of trafficking Democrat mindset is at least in my opinion, is almost totally extinct.
I think that's why the blue collar, we've been seeing the blue collar vote pretty much ever since Trump came on the scene, has just been steadily year after year shifting red. And it's only getting worse now with all the, you know, corporations and everything going extremely far left with their policies and getting really into the politically correct stuff. Because that's one thing we all know that blue-collar workers do not like, and that's political correctness and all of that. So cancel culture.
That's why I left the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. It isn't the same party that Jim Trafficking had. It's the same party Ted Strickland led.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
hey, I know you were. Yeah.
Rush Limbaugh is what I grew up on. Okay. So.
He was Uncle Rush, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Uncle Rush.
So when I was sick at home and I was watching Young and the Restless and Price is Right, eat my saltine crackers when I had the flu.
He still watches.
You were watching C-SPAN and Rush Limbaugh.
Exactly.
You're watching the EIB network. You probably called off school just to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. My dad would pick me up from school, and I could hear Rush Limbaugh like blaring through the windows because it would be playing so loudly.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you guys this, because you're young professionals, and being a young Republican isn't popular.
No.
But it is becoming more and more popular in the Mahoney Valley now because of leadership like you guys and Young Republicans Club and the things you guys are doing. What I seem to see is a lot of the young guys were first brought over to the Republican Party in a sense from those late night talk shows, that kind of conspiracy shows, you know what I'm talking about, Art Bell and things like that at night. Seems like they listen to those somewhat, and then they realize, hey, maybe the real media is not telling us the truth, and then they end up realizing, hey, maybe the world's not telling us the truth. They find the Republican Party. Is that true for you guys at all, or is that just something?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people get their information from all over alternative platforms now. There's just so much out there. You know, like Candace Owens, she built herself up as Red Pill Black, which was a YouTube star, and, you know, she was basically evangelizing, you know, black Americans to become conservatives through, you know, that name of Red Pill Black. So I think that's, you know, something that a lot of younger people do get their information from.
And that does burn me up while you're saying that. Mm-hmm. Why is it going to be so, the Democrats, they've got the black and other minorities, they got the union guy. I don't see that at all. When I ran for commissioner as independent, I saw guys who were happy to get jobs and guys that voted for Trump that were union guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I had as many black friends through the campaign and supporters and sportsmen that for them to put the divide, that's not something the Republicans do. Nope. That's something the Democrats build, that wall. You know, they're against wall building. They build a wall to kind of keep their people from learning about us. They keep the people from learning about the Republicans and realizing these are good guys that want to give you jobs and want you to have a better life. So they're trained to be, we're the boogeyman. And I think a lot of people realize through Trump a little bit that Republicans aren't the boogeyman. You know, they forget Republicans were the party of Abe Lincoln. I mean, it's the Democrats were good at that, but then they just went off the tracks. You know, they were good at manipulating their people. But then they went off the tracks with how radical and how left they've become in years. And that's what drove me right out of the party. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that, you know, I thought, growing up in a union household, I thought that's what I had to be. I was a Democrat. I was born that way. It's like, you're Catholic, you're a Democrat, and you're white. This is what you are. Mm-hmm. No, I realized I don't have to be that.
Yeah.
That there's a better way, a better path. Regina, we got some items coming up. We're coming to the end of the show here. We got a couple of items coming up. What do you want to talk about? A breakfast?
Yeah, we have our Trumbull County GOP breakfast at Cafe 422 this Saturday. It's at 9 o'clock, and our guest speaker is Josh Wendell. So come out and join us. Ask him any questions you have. And then on the 20th of April, we have our Lincoln Day dinner in Trumbull County. And our guest speaker is Bob Paducek. He is now our Ohio State Party chairman. So join us to that as well.
And they could go to any of go to Facebook where find Trumbull County Republican
Trumbull
Party.
Trumbull County GOP Facebook.
Find Regina McManus. They can link through the station here, Youngstown Studio, to get to us. But those are events we're inviting you to come on out and see it. Meet Josh Mandel for yourself.
Regina, can you go over the Josh Mandel invite?
Oh, our breakfast is this Saturday, 9 o'clock in the morning. That's on the 17th at Cafe 422.
Not this Saturday, next Saturday.
Oh, yes, next Saturday. I get my week 17th. Confused. The 17th, yes. And that's at Cafe 422 in Warren, Ohio. And Josh Mandel is our guest speaker. So join us. Ask him any questions you have. And come on, have fun with a room full of conservatives.
Yeah, everybody's welcome. They just need to make a reservation so we know that you're coming. And 422 is going to take care of everybody there.
Yeah,
love
that.
And then the Bob Paduchek, Lincoln Day. Most counties have a Lincoln Day party. We got Trey Gowdy.
We do. That's Mahoney County. Friday. That's sold out, right?
Yeah, tickets are sold out. A fun thing that's going to be happening there is we're going to be doing a straw poll. So we will be asking everybody in attendance to let us know their preference for the Senate and governor races.
Oh, that's right.
It's going to be the first real look we get at how people are feeling about those two primaries. It's going to be really exciting. If you've not bought your ticket already, I think you're out of luck, but it should be a great event, and we should have a big crowd.
Well, this is a great show. Thank you guys for coming so much.
Thank you.
And H&F
Strategies.
Yep. They can find you on Facebook or somewhere. If they like what you have to say, they're a potential candidate, they want some advice, they want to hire you to do some of their marketing, social media, run a campaign, how do they get a hold of you?
Find us on Twitter, and our website is hfstrategies.com.
hfstrategies.com. Okay, Jonathan, Tex, Thomas, Regina, great show. We look forward to next week.
Yeah, and we'll have seeing to have you guys back on.
Yeah, with more conservative talk. Yeah, definitely have these guys back on as the campaigns get closer. Mm-hmm. I learned so much that I felt like I was in school.
Yeah, happy
Thank
to be on.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our program, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.